This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Tinderbox, the untold story of the upstairs lounge fire and the rise of gay liberation. The book by author Robert Fiesler has won praise and the Edgar and Louisiana Literary Awards. It profiles a deadly arson at a gay bar in New Orleans back in 1973. Fiesler is set to discuss Tinderbox this evening at 7 with Cincy Stories' Chris Ashwell, facilitated by the Mercantile Library downtown. And Robert Fiesler joins us now via Zoom. Robert, welcome to our program.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you could join us ahead of your event this evening. And this book is really intense, and it's such an important moment in gay history that is often forgotten. 32 people died in this fire, and the story, at least prior to your book, is not well known. So can you just help our listeners and me understand what that world was like in New Orleans in 1973 for a devastating tragedy like this to be largely forgotten?
Sure. I mean, the entire context of the event that I write about, which is called the Upstairs Lounge Fire, which was a notoriously unsolved arson fire that took place at a gay bar in called the Upstairs Lounge in 1973 New Orleans, and it claimed 32 lives, right? The lives of 31 men and one woman. It was the deadliest fire on record in New Orleans history and the worst mass killing of homosexuals in actually U.S. history until the 2016 massacre at Pulse, right? A record that was never meant to be broken. And yet this event, this calamity, received just a few days of media attention in its time due to rampant anti-gay bias, because it happened within the context of people forget about this now in the 21st century, but the criminalization of homosexuality, which meant that it was illegal in effect in many different ways to be gay in New Orleans. 1970s New Orleans had a longstanding tradition, because New Orleans is a freewheeling city, of allowing queer folk, who would be called now queer, to exist in so much as their behavior remained discreet, out of sight, and undeclared, right? A gay man had to be a bachelor. The instant you declared yourself as gay, you were a threat to the system, and you could provoke violent reprisals from police at that span of time. So that was the context that the Upstairs Lounge Fire occurred in, right? When national polls would be asking the average American about how they felt about homosexuality, 7 out of 10 Americans would answer that homosexuality was always wrong. Or same polls, same percentage, 7 out of 10 Americans would say that homosexuality was contrary to the American way of life. So people viewed the Upstairs Lounge tragedy, this emergency moment, which would have normally elicited a lot of sympathy from the public, within the lens of homosexuality being a violent criminal behavior that needed to be stamped out. And that thus, that's a huge part of the reason why the Upstairs Lounge Fire is an unsolved crime, despite a bounty of evidence that was actually pointing towards a chief suspect, an internally conflicted gay-for-pay hustler who'd been violently ejected from the Upstairs Lounge minutes before the fire began. This guy named Roger Dale Nunez. This crime, right, this mystery, was deemed politically inconvenient and actually socially distasteful in the time due to all of these homosexual overtones, and thus it was permitted to become the historic mystery that it is now.
It's interesting that you characterize homosexual life in that era, and more interesting that this nightclub also doubled as a church.
Oh, yes. I mean, it was a community gathering space. The Upstairs Lounge management had had really strict rules against seedy behavior. So there was no hustling or prostitution that was permitted inside the bar. There was no tea room sex, which is what, this wasn't a place where gay men were parading around in towels, et cetera, or necking in corners. This was a place that was actually considered safe for families and for the children of several of the gay regulars of the Upstairs Lounge victims and the straight regulars that would come to the Upstairs Lounge. And then the Upstairs Lounge although when you passed it on the street, you would never have guessed that such a large facility existed, accessed by a lone staircase, actually, that had served as the entrance and exit to the bar, in multiple rooms in this second story location. But there was so much space with inside the Upstairs Lounge, and the management created such an egalitarian atmosphere, encouraging all sorts of community participation, that one of the rooms for a span of time did serve as a worship space for a gay-friendly Christian congregation, then considered very radical in the 70s. but nonetheless that existed inside the upstairs lounge in the back theater hall. The church was called the Metropolitan Community Church. The upstairs lounge was also considered a safe space, what would be called now, for early gender minorities who would perform various kinds of nightclub acts or drag acts in the second room for charity, oftentimes to support what was then called a charity hospital or the crippled children's hospital was the terminology that was used at that point in time. But these shows were held free of charge from the bar. And then in the front room, it was a piano bar. There was a white baby grand piano that people would gather around to sing ditties and to croon together as they imbibed their, you know, famous New Orleans cocktails, et cetera. And because this was a 1970s bar with gay men in it singing around a piano, guess what they were singing oftentimes?
What?
Show tune. Okay.
Well, some things never change, I suppose. So we're talking with Robert Fiesler, the author of the book Tenderbox, The Untold Story of the Upstairs Lounge Fire and the Rise of Gay Liberation. He has an event this evening at 7 with Cincy Stories' Chris Ashwell. It's facilitated by the Mercantile Library, and we do have a link at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab for more information. And so, Robert, again, you know that this is a church, and also in the book, you write about some of the characteristics of these 32 victims who perished in this fire. A third of them were veterans. More than a third were under the age of 30, so a young crowd. More than a third were practicing Christians. Seven were married to women previously, and through that, six of them were fathers. And you point that out in the context of a pastor's remarks in 1995, expressing the importance of remembering the upstairs lounge fire. And he said that those characteristics defied a lot of stereotypes. So I'm wondering, I mean, this was 22 years later that this pastor said these things. What kind of reckoning was the local community going through, if any, at that point?
The upstairs lounge tragedy had sort of evaporated from local history at that span in time. It was in a storytelling society like New Orleans, where any out-of-towner who sits down at a bar stool and just utters their name is going to be peppered with questions from locals asking you about your stories, and then locals are going to want to tell you their stories. So in this egalitarian storytelling culture, like New Orleans, one story was off limits for years, and that was the upstairs lounge tragedy, because no one quite knew what to do with it anymore. The upstairs lounge calamity occurred again within this context of a New Orleanian straight society that was trying to encourage in the early 1970s then tourists to come to town to spend consequences-free weekends. And so the idea of a burning bar wasn't very good PR for them. And the upstairs lounge tragedy was also erased by a closeted gay community at that point who were used to the system as it had existed. The notion that so long as you don't stick your neck out very far, you could exist within a kind of semi-closeted niche in the corner. And that so long as you obeyed that social compact, police would only harass you once in a while. So suddenly, imagine within that milieu and that environment, this explosive, literally explosive event occurred where flames burst through the windows of this bar that people passed by every day didn't even know existed. It was so well concealed. And it exposed this large gay subterranean in the city that hadn't yet before publicly dealt with it. And what resulted was a kind of organ rejection and denial. People just didn't want to acknowledge the deadliest event that had happened in New Orleans in 1973, 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years later. So it took up to honestly, an out-of-towner minister who had been a member of that ragtag church that met parts of the membership, Metropolitan Community Church, survived the upstairs lounge tragedy. They had a sort of wayward history. And eventually it took a minister with that church in 1995 to raise his voice at a sermon that was then very controversial in New Orleans, where he based an entire religious experience that day on the 22nd anniversary of the upstairs lounge fire, saying that we have to reclaim this history. Memory is an important part of the human condition, a way of acknowledging our grief. And his voice was actually the first voice that birthed the beginning of the upstairs lounge legacy in New Orleans. And from there, you can sort of post-date anything that's happened about upstairs lounge scholarship, including my book, all the musicals that have been made about the Upstairs Lounge tragedy, the documentaries. You can even post date from there the way that the Metropolitan Community Church from 1995 through 2003, they fought for 8 years to finally lay a bronze plaque, a permanent monument and marker in front of the historic site. All of that happened and was spurred because one minister at that time said, enough, we have to remember this event. It's unfair that this is off the map of LGBT history. And this was actually an important event in American history. And so he spoke up. And the result of that is everything I just spoke of.
And Robert, you also, I mean, I was sad to read in your book that some of the people who work to forget or at least not acknowledge the circumstances of this fire and the people within it were family members of the victims. Mm-hmm. Three of them were never identified. And even that pastor's remarks as he listed the names of most of the 32 victims was forced to say unidentified white male three yep. times. It's just so mm-hmm. devastating to understand. And as you noted earlier in our conversation, Robert, this had been the deadliest mass killing of homosexuals in the United States until the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando in 2016. Mm-hmm. And you were working on this book when that happened. And you said yeah. in an interview with City Beat here in Cincinnati that this reframed your approach to the story. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. This event that had seemed like an obscure sort of off to the corner left field event in queer history that I was going to be trying to make a very laborious argument about why it deserved inclusion in the LGBT plus canon, suddenly was thrust into the national and international limelight following the Pulse nightclub shooting. So the terrible field of carnage wrought by the Pulse nightclub shooter Omar Mateen created just a massive outpouring of grief in this country. I mean, the President Obama acknowledged that federal buildings threw their flags at half staff, and the amount of attention that went towards the Pulse nightclub shooting into this collective communal grieving experience shed a little bit of light on individuals who started to look for historic antecedents of the kind of lone wolf violence that was made manifest at Pulse. And individuals, this wasn't any scholar, actually. These were individuals on Reddit, and then, local journalists found the history that existed of the Upstairs Lounge tragedy and revived it in national memory. So more stories came out about the Upstairs tragedy following the Pulse nightclub shooting than had in the previous four decades of attempts to memorialize the Upstairs Lounge event and then the beginnings of scholarship of it. And so suddenly this event that had seemed so, obscure to people, that it seemed perhaps would raise a question mark in the mind of the average reader. Like, what does this have to do to me? A fire in a gay bar in 1973 in New Orleans. Yeah, many of the victims, were from around the country. Families were affected, et cetera. But what does this have to do with modern history? Now, all of a sudden, it had a very strong thread and connection to events that when tied to the Pulse nightclub legacy, showed that there was so much more work to be done to repel the forces that in this country that would like to beat back queer people into the shadows.
As you note, Robert, there have been other books, a documentary, a musical about this event. So it's been explored. But I'm wondering, in your own research, in our last minute together, what did you find that maybe generated the most emotion for you, or maybe the most shock or surprise?
The backstory of the most infamous Upstairs Lounge victim, Reverend Bill Larson of the MCC Church, who had notoriously burned to death in the windowsill of the Upstairs Lounge within public view, and people took pictures of him. There was nothing known for decades about Bill Larson's backstory, and I was able to trace him to his childhood, where he was born in Estill County, Kentucky. And then I found out that he actually then moved with his family and grew up in an orphanage in Hamilton, Ohio. And I was able to note the weekly reports of him growing up and sort of connect him to a past and to an origin. And also to World War II service. I found that he had served in the war in the 7th Armored Division in the European theater. And then knowing all of that, Bill Larson for years had actually, his remains were placed in an unmarked, unidentified crypt in New Orleans. And using the evidence we found about his World War II service, we were able to get the VA to place a marker on his grave. And I think that was the most meaningful, most important thing I was able to locate and really to do, not just for this book, but in my life, I feel, was to sort of connect that man back to his lineage and back to his past.
Wow. Robert Fiesler is the author of Tinderbox, The Untold Story of the Upstairs Lounge Fire and the Rise of Gay Liberation. An event tonight at 7 with Cincy Stories at the Mercantile Library is available online. We've got a link at wvxu.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. Robert, it was a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for sharing your book and story with us, and hope we'll talk again.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at wvxu.org. I'm Michael Marks.